Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips, and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge, and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Thank you for joining me and welcome back to the CPI podcast. In this episode, we have a really interesting and industry-connected guest, Jane Sarton. She's the Executive Director of the Flexible Workspace Association. It's a UK trade organisation set up for flexible space providers. So who better to talk to about the diversity of the workspace industry? Now, originally, the organisation was called the Business Centre Association and has been running for well over 20 years. At one point, I did a two-year stint on the board up until 2013. It was a really useful experience for me where I could learn more about the industry up close and personal. Since then, the organisation has gone on to change and develop to include a more diverse range of member organisations. Now, I'm really pleased I can share this conversation with you to give you more context about the flexible space industry and how we as private investors and operators can find our niche. Time to listen in. Hi, welcome, Jane. Nice to see you again. It's been a wee while since we caught up. I think we last met in Edinburgh. Is that right?
Yes, I think in August, which definitely seems a long time ago.
It seems like ages ago, doesn't it? So, So let's introduce you to the podcast. I'm really excited about having you on the show because there's so much knowledge you've got of our industry. So you're currently Executive Director of the Flexible Space Association, right?
That's it, yes, which is the UK-wide trade association for the flexible workspace industry.
Yeah, so shortened to FLEXA. So if there's an event on, there's sometimes a FLEXA.
Exactly, partly because the FSA is already an acronym used by other organisations, so we couldn't take that one, so we've done something different, but FLEXA works.
Brilliant, so maybe we should just give people a bit of a context about what the association does, what it represents right now, and we might delve into the past because it's been around in other forms for quite a long time, hasn't it? But maybe you could just start off by just telling us who the association represents right now and what you feel the main sort of functions are.
So we operate as a membership organisation, and that's in terms of funding essentially, and many trade associations do probably most take that model. And our members comprise workspace operators ranging from, well, IWG are our largest member, TOG, Landmark and others, the larger ones, but all the way, you know, quite a lot of single site business centres are also members, and it's the full range. So those are the workspace operators, and then we also have service provider members, and they cover a whole range of services provided into the sector, technology, legal, consultancy, it's furniture. It's quite, when I joined, it was quite surprising to me to realise just how many businesses are linked in. And I guess that's growing because the industry is growing. And in terms of what we do, we're here to speak on behalf of the industry on lobbying activities. Business rates have taken over my life at the moment. And then we also run lots of events to bring the membership together and the wider industry. We regularly have people that aren't members at those events. And we promote, support, advise people within the industry, provide lots of information and whole range of activities, really.
Yeah, it is a diverse church, right? So just maybe let's just touch on that, because I remember certainly when I was working with the association at the time, that there were more mailbox providers coming in, there was co-working spaces coming in, there was really quite a diverse range of people providing those services. I mean, what's the sort of, not the oddest, but what are some of the more different types of organizations? Because obviously bread and butter is serviced offices, but there's really quite a diverse range there now.
Absolutely. Yeah, virtual office providers certainly fall within our members. I think we might only have one that is all that they do. Mm-hmm. In general, it tends to sit within other types of services. We have a virtual office forum, which brings together some of the government bodies that link into that. So HMRC, Trading Standards, Police, Companies House and others. And I think that's seen as a really useful forum, because it is a complicated area, and I think everyone worries if you get it wrong, then there's difficulties. And I think it also makes sure that the industry is shown in a good, responsible light, that we're wanting to be having those conversations. And then in other types of services, it's perhaps not just the services, it's how they're provided. I think I'm really struck by the diversity of types of workspace that's offered in terms of the design, and and that ranges from, you know, simple white office through to incredibly high-end design, interesting buildings, so it is that whole range.
And we've started and we spoke briefly beforehand about that word, hotelification of the serviced office market. It's something that's becoming a word people are using more. And, you know, it would be interesting to see, from your perspective, are lots of people discussing that because it's just a sexy topic to talk about? Or actually, is it something that's really sweeping the industry? What's your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot to learn from that industry. And we had our annual conference in 2021. We had Alexandra Livesey, who's the CEO of Clockwise, speaking, and she had come not that long before that point, really, from the hotel industry, and had a wealth of experience in that, and was bringing that experience in. So she was out, she spoke about the parallels and what could be learned from it, and how there were many, many things in the direction that flexible workspace was taking that was perhaps bringing it more into line with the hotel industry. It's about service, isn't it? It's customer service. I think certainly, perhaps particularly coming out of the pandemic, when there were maybe some more changes in what people were doing, we were definitely hearing more people who'd come from the hotel industry into serviced offices and other types of workspace, and had that fantastic high standards of customer service, which can really help make success of what this industry does.
Yeah, it's diversifying the industry. It's making it the breadth of cover is quite considerable, isn't it? From an operator who maybe doesn't have any staff on site, just your basic offer, but that's maybe what that market needs, through to a whole different approach. I mean, so for instance, we often now use the term members. I remember I used to get told off for saying tenants, so everybody's a client, right? But now they're members because our model's changing, and the approach that we take to treating each individual person that uses our space, not just the person who signs the check or pays the rent, but everybody, you're treating them all as members. And the Flexible Space Association is a reflection, I think, the name, because we changed, when was the name changed, Jane? From
2019. It's the same organisation. It's doing the same things. But I think I was, because I joined at the very end of 2018, and I was getting a lot of feedback from our member companies who didn't call it, was the Business Centre Association, and they wouldn't call themselves what they did. But we still have large numbers of business centres within the membership and the wider industry. And they're equally, they're doing sometimes something a bit different than other types of, co-working space or whatever. But I think flexible space was felt to be more all-encompassing.
Yeah, I'm 100% behind that. I think it was the right name change, and at the right time. And as we were just discussing, there's one or two new words coming out, right? And I do remember when co-working started coming on the scene as a prevalent thing, and the Business Centre Association had a little bit of a tendency to look over at co-working with a kind of an eye of, I'm not sure what these guys are doing. And the co-working industry would look over at the BCA and kind of say, well, I'm not really sure what they were doing, and they didn't seem to meet. But now all of that has changed. It seems to be much more integrated.
Definitely. And some of this is almost a language issue, isn't it? I think in the US, co-working again is taken as a more all-encompassing term for a flexible workspace. So we need to be slightly careful in terms of dividing up too much, because it's essentially offering the same types of service, just different words.
Yeah, it is. I remember having that discussion with Jamie Russo, and she was very much about co-working, but to me, co-working is more a shared space.
Yeah.
But Jamie, it's really effectively what we would have called a business centre, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Interchangeable, right?
Yeah, and hot desking is still used, but not perhaps to the same extent. Often hot desking has become co-working space.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, right. So you mentioned business rates, as being a bit of a challenge at the moment. And I do remember when I was involved with the BCA, at one point in the dim distant past, I was down at Parliament lobbying. And I'm pretty sure it was about business rights then, and that was about 10 years ago at least. So business rights is an issue. What's your thoughts, feelings, what feedback are you getting from the inner corridors of Parliament?
So we've got a current issue, which at the moment is only impacting England and Wales. But I think the feeling is if it carries on, it will move to Scotland and Northern Ireland, where there is a shift towards not assessing individual serviced offices, but assessing the building as a whole, which could have significant detrimental consequences to the small businesses that make their home in serviced offices, and you know, not being eligible for small business rates relief and empty rates relief not applying for the operators. Yeah, there's a lot of consequences of that. It got driven by a small number of local authorities. The VOA indicated support for that move. So we are spending a significant amount of time and resources trying to ensure that that doesn't become the normal approach.
Yeah, because the cost ultimately is going to be for the small business, which absolutely is the very one that they're supposed to be working for, isn't it?
So we feel like we've got a really strong case to make, but it is a very technical issue. I've learned a lot about business rates in the last few months, but I still, you know, long way from being an expert on it. And I think, yeah, Many of those that run business centres particularly would be, you know, our small businesses. So we feel like we've got a strong case to make, and that the government aren't going to want to see that what the consequences of that shift. But there's a bit of a way to go at the moment.
Yeah, and it's the definitions is the bit.
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
It's really difficult as well, isn't it? Because is this down to the title? The title is basically that the rates, what the rates value gets placed on, or is it when you have, you know, three or four industrial units that are all completely separate from each other with separate toilets and everything else, but actually they're under the same title? What, you know, what do you do there?
And I think these are all the complications and many more.
Yeah.
And I think something that I've learned in the last few months of talking to many within the industry is everyone's also doing things slightly differently. There are different arrangements with different local authorities. Then we also have the Four Nations. So it's definitely complicated. But it's definitely something. Yeah, it's what we're here for, to try and resolve it. So
fantastic. Okay, right. Well, we'll maybe catch up about that when you have some news. So last year, I think, was conference. I chaired a panel about ESG. I think it was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just about energy, social and governance. And energy really is the one that people are talking a lot about.
Yeah.
But obviously because of the cost of energy, but actually the larger corporates are really not just talking about that now. They're talking about how you run your business, how they run their business, the type of environment, all that sort of thing. So what are the things that you're seeing coming through now? Is there any more concrete pressure on operators to do that? Because obviously the government have a stick approach, but then the other side is the customers coming in saying, look, you know, we need this. And where I'm based, just to give a bit more context, you know, we're not really in city centres. We've got one in a city centre, but most of our locations are periphery, secondary locations, and our client base isn't necessarily KPMG or NHS. So within London, I would think there's more of that. But are you seeing or hearing of more pulling from customers?
And a question that I had a number of times over the past year or so is operators getting in touch, particularly smaller ones, to say, I've been asked by a prospective customer for information on energy ratings and things, which they have never been before. So I think there's definitely a lot more interest out there, and it isn't just the corporates. And I think businesses are realizing that, particularly, you know, maybe younger people coming into the workforce have a lot more interest in this, a lot more knowledge in it, and want to be working for companies that are, you know, environmentally, socially responsible. And of course, if they don't control their own workspace, then they're going to need to ask the operators for that information.
Yeah, so there is becoming more impact, but you're helping members by giving them a little bit of support on what they might need to do. It's quite tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been a few conversations, and then the broader issue of energy prices is clearly hitting, as it is every industry. And I've certainly had quite a lot of queries in terms of, are other people increasing what they're charging because of energy prices? And that's coming quite a lot. And I think it varies significantly, and also it depends. You know, some people were lucky and all thought, you know, or well planning in terms of locking in good deals earlier on, which have still got a way to run, then they're clearly in a better position than those who you know, are seeing their contracts come to an end, you know, now. So I think, yeah, it varies, but I think most people, in reality, is we're all seeing prices going up in absolutely everything that we're purchasing. So it's not a surprise, I'm sure, to anybody with flexible workspace that they're seeing those charges increasing.
And certainly our membership, our clients are 99% of the time just saying, yep, we accept there's an increase here on your license fee just because of what's going on. But what is there any interesting things you've seen there about what flex space companies are doing to mitigate that, other than raising prices?
And certainly trying to take steps to encourage just the basic things like turning lights off. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, how many, particularly if you're outside on a dark evening and you can see office blocks that have still got all the lights on. And I see in the office building that we're in, if I leave late in the evening and walk past all the offices that have still got their lights in, I find that quite frustrating, that it's not that difficult to turn the switch off as you walk out. So I think there is some of that approach of just trying to encourage everybody to do the right thing. And obviously it's in customers' interests as well, isn't it, in the long term, to be doing sensible things. And clearly, you know, steps around heating efficiency and not having other things on when they're, you know, not leaving the television in the reception area on 24/7, because it really doesn't need to be, even though it might be easier. Yeah, small steps that can be taken at least.
So trying to increase prices in general, which is acceptable, and also trying to reduce their impact or the amount they're using, making it more efficient, I guess, is the key thing, isn't it?
Yes.
I wanted to just talk a little bit about the market in general, Jane, if that's possible. And I know that it's hard to pin down definitions of what our market is, just based on the context of what we discussed earlier on about all the different operators and what they do. But just in terms of more traditional serviced office spaces, have you got some stats on just how many there are locations in the UK, or how many are maybe more independent? And I appreciate we maybe have to discuss what independent means, but just in general, the size of the market.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much these figures vary. The figure that Instant Group publish in terms of the total number of UK flexible workspaces is just over 6,000. But it varies. You talk to other brokers and it's quite a lot. The figure can be quite a lot lower. So I think that depends on what you're really including as a flexible workspace. But it's definitely hard to get a real handle on what that figure is. It's a constant pressure. It's constant discussion at our board meetings as to what the size of the total market is.
So here's maybe just an example. So one of the customers I'm dealing with in my sort of consultancy support side has a unit with about 9 spaces in it, 9 offices. It's in a traditional building. It's not flexible in that we can drop walls and things because they're stone walls and stuff. But nevertheless, the entrance to it is flexible. You know, it's 24 hours you're in, 12-month license, 3-month notice period, the sort of things we would expect in terms of flexible offer, but not necessarily flexible space. And that will be completely under the radar. you know, in terms of Instant and others. And there are quite a few others I think in my head, well, actually, yep, these guys have just started. They've maybe got a space with, I can think of another one. They've got six kind of industrial workshoppy type spaces within one property. To me, I would call that a commercial multiple occupancy building. I'm not sure whether it would be flex space. It's difficult to know where the definition would lie.
Yeah, no, the small town that I live in has got a coffee shop, which I think got a bit frustrated with the number of people that came in, sat at their laptops and spent a very long time working with one cup of coffee, and have now used the empty floor above the coffee shop to use as co-working space. And there are no laptop signs on all of the tables in the coffee shop area.
Interesting.
It feels unlikely that that's in the radar of the brokers, because it is a very local, small facility. So again, there must be a lot of examples like that, particularly on small co-working space, that aren't being captured in those figures.
Yeah. So when I was thinking, and you and I had that conversation, I was thinking about, right, Jane would be great to have on the podcast to discuss the industry and obviously to also talk about what you know, what the organization does, but it just brings up that thing about, well, what is the industry? And from my point of view, I feel my customer base listening to the podcast, podcast listeners, generally they're private investors. They generally maybe have a little bit of experience in residential. They're looking at getting into commercial property. They're thinking about maybe an angle or a way of adding value. And often that's taking a redundant building or a building that's not working very well and subdividing it. And often they are subdivided already. It's just putting in multiple clients. And I think, you know, originally, let's just say the Business Centre Association as a name would feel too distant. It just, I've not got a business centre. Well, you maybe have a flexible space. So it's just that the industry is becoming much wider. And I think there's a lot of people that don't understand they're maybe even in that industry. And probably most listeners have an accountant or somebody that is probably in a mixed use building. You know, it's actually in a building that has a lawyer in and a doctor and various different things that go on, and you think, well, is that part of flexible space? It's quite difficult, isn't it, to actually define what's going on.
Definitely, I think, yes. Yeah, the broader it gets as well in terms of the different types of workspace that's included within it. And I think that's becoming increased since the pandemic, the growth in hybrid working and in how people are working, it is resulting in a growth in the industry. And it's, I think increasingly we're going to see people doing things in slightly different ways, but they do all have some kind of joint connection of what they're doing is flexible workspace.
Yeah, you're right. And there's definitely a reflection from COVID as to what's going on. And that does lead me on to a question I do want to ask, which is just, you know, shifts in market demand. Have you seen, and obviously the operators respond to that, investors respond to that, but have you seen a shift in the type of product or an acceleration of certain types of product?
And you mentioned membership. I think membership schemes have definitely increased significantly in that in the last year or 18 months. During the pandemic, we ran lots of virtual roundtable meetings because we would normally bring people together in cities, couldn't do that, realized we could bring them online, and we kind of divided up the UK and brought people together, which went really well. And I remember it started to become a bit of a theme that people were saying, I've been approached by people who only want an office or a desk for 2 days a week. Yeah. And that's just not going to be possible. How are we going to work that commercially? But it is now pretty commonplace in those variety of membership schemes that you buy your pass that gets you access to 10 days a month or whatever it is. There's all sorts of combinations within that. You get companies that are able to buy a certain number of passes without having to mean that they're for an individual, so that they can use them in different places. They want bigger companies want staff to be able to work closer to home in different parts of the UK. So I think that feels it's a real shift, because the reality is it's unusual now for people that are office based to be in that office 5 days a week, and that's the way it is. And yeah, I'm talking to you right now from home because this is I'm more confident that it'll be quiet here, and yes, it's but I'm 20 minutes drive from the office. Once we've finished talking, I will go into the office. So much more flexible approach to way that working in the place that works for the task that you're doing.
Yeah, so providers are having to think about maybe not having a a 12-month license for an 8-person space that might now be still 8 people,
yeah,
but they're using the space in completely different ways.
Yeah, and needing, I think everyone's accepted the need to be more flexible in what they're doing, and that approach and it is working. And there is still also the people maybe start out with taking a desk for a few days a month, but then realize that actually what is in the premises that they're in are some small private offices, so maybe that would be better for them. So yeah, there is those opportunities as well to increase that business.
Yeah, I think it's important also just to say, you know, that there's still a place for operators at a different part of the market. There's, I think for people that are just looking at the market from the outside, it might be exciting to think about co-working, and it is quite an interesting, vibrant space to be in and dealing with lots of different people doing lots of different things. It's really quite absorbing and quite exciting to be in that environment. But if you're looking at investing in property and you're thinking, well, I'm not sure I want to have such a trading activity going on, I think I need some more secure income. For quite a lot of providers now, I think it's that kind of central space that you mentioned about being able to come in and use hot desks and do different types of uses, but having the permanence of some private space around that. And it seems that the co-working industry, going back to what's the co-working industry, but the shared space industry struggled. I remember during that kind of that breakout time when they were really accelerating, they struggled with not having private space. And we were struggling because we didn't have co-working space. And actually that blend now is really working really well. But for new operators that are looking more from an investment point of view, I think you don't have to worry too much about creating this huge vibrant space with loads of sexy furniture and all the technology in the world, because actually there's a place for all sorts of types of offers. And if you're in a local town where maybe they're not quite ready for that, or maybe they're just looking for a quiet space with really good internet, there's a place for all of it. And have you seen, a dramatic shift towards all the shared spaces and co-working? Actually, are all the operators that have just got their head down and keeping on with it all doing just fine?
Yeah, I think the reality is that the co-working space, so, and you know, WeWork are a classic on this, that if you're particularly in central London where they've got some large buildings, if you're a member of the public walking past, you look through the glass windows and you see all these desks with people working in all this shared space. You don't look up that every other floor of the building is private offices. Yeah. And so I think it's that presentation bit in some ways. And I think, yeah, most people that are, you know, running reasonable sized businesses that have co-working space will also be providing those private offices and meeting rooms and other activities as well. But yeah, it's a good, that genuine co-working space is definitely a good entry point for people, particularly testing as to whether or not this is the type of workspace that would work for them. And it's also helpful if you're in a private office with other people, then having somewhere else within the building you can go and sit as well is often good. So I think there's lots of wins for it. But not that long ago, someone was saying to me that there was, I think it was actually local authority run, they had some co-working space. They, in one building, which had been very successful, they'd seen a real increase in interest in it. Another floor of the building became available and they thought, great, we can add more co-working space. But that was it. They were clearly at the limit in terms of customers for that, and they struggled to fill the new space.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, they hadn't quite worked out what the tipping point was. Yeah. Have you seen any other kind of challenges that operators have had recently with the market shift? Is there any sort of things you could highlight that people have struggled with? I mean, obviously we spoke about heating and energy costs, but in terms of just the model or the market demand?
I think what's been interesting is it's almost quite hard to see a real pattern, and that sometimes it's surprising that you'll talk, particularly operators that are running a number of centres in maybe different places, even or you know, different places within a large city, and they can't quite put their finger on why some of them are working and some aren't. And I think that's clearly difficult. And I guess it depends on the competition locally as well. I mean, the reality is as the sector grows, then there is more competition, and like, you know, I guess in some areas there will only be so many customers that are going to be looking for those facilities. So I guess that has some level of impact. And I think, yeah, services evolving, and also the focus on the look of workspace, and that perhaps more people, particularly those that are maybe coming out of corporate offices, are looking for well-designed workspace, and that's a bit more what they're looking yeah. for. But there is clearly scope for a variety of models.
Okay, so let's just delve into a little bit more. So let's park London, right? I remember there used to be a stat that within the M25, there was more service space than there was anywhere else in the world. It was just phenomenal. But obviously, it's grown to lots of other locations. And you've mentioned earlier on, you've been out to Manchester, you've been out to Birmingham. We met in Edinburgh. You're out doing roadshows and meeting other operators. So just parking London, looking at other markets, is there some things that you've noticed that people are doing really well? Maybe it's just something that's making things work, tick better?
Yeah, I mean, I think the variety is important. So we did a workspace tour in Birmingham a few weeks ago with some of our members. So they were seeing each other's workspaces, and we went round. And what really struck everybody was the variety. And at the end, there was a conversation around, yes, we're competitors, but we're all doing something different, and there is a market for what we're doing. And they were all doing reasonably well in terms of occupancy, but it was a variety of buildings, in particular the beautiful listed building, the more basic, office space that was very centrally located. We went to a spaces building that had a new innovation of the idea is it's a step up from co-working space in giving people some private space, but in kind of open cubicles, but with doors that can lock. And everyone thought that was, yeah, really, it was something different. It'll be interesting to see how that, yeah, whether that, it, that grows as a concept.
Yeah. Yeah. As a consequence of a shape and style of a floor that we had in a building, we actually did that. We've got very small cubicles around a co-working space in the middle, and it's worked really well. And during COVID, when we finished it, it got used a lot. And I thought, well, is that just a symptom of COVID? Everyone wants to be in their isolation booth, or does it continue after? And it has continued. It's been really popular. And we've started trying to just incorporate that a little bit more design now, where we're doing, especially if we've got an open plan spaces, let's fit a central breakout co-work space, but around the perimeter, try and fit office smaller pods rather than larger spaces. And it's just been working really well. It's quite interesting how that's
going. Yeah, and I think that something that's changed is how much time we're all spending on these kind of calls, the video calls of different types. And the reality is, and one of the reasons that I'm doing this from home at the moment is because if I'd gone into my office, we've got other people in that private office, doesn't really work if conversations are going on. Even with headphones, you still get distracted. And then it's a case of, can you book a meeting room? Is there something available? So I think, that there is definitely a need for more spaces like that. And we don't have any of those, the sort of phone booth type things, but I use them when I go to other flexible workspaces and really like them. So again, it's those kind of facilities in a changing way of working.
Unfortunately, they're not cheap, Jane.
No, I know. Problem.
They're like $5,000-$6,000 just for something basic.
Yeah. I was seeing them built in as well, though, for new workspace. They're actually being built into the structure, and put a door on the front and a basic table, and that's great.
Yeah, because you work out, actually, probably I could build this for half the price and still have the impact. Mm. Yeah.
It's an option, yeah.
There's a conference coming up, right?
23rd of May, yes.
What's the topic this year?
Now you put me on the spot, because I'm not going to remember the title off the top of my head. So last year we focused particularly on ESG matters. Yep. We're taking the approach this year to be a bit more general in terms of being able to cover a wide range of topics of things that are relevant to the sector. Business rates will definitely come up. We're looking at the role that co-working space can play in supporting local economy, and I think there'll be a wide range of topics again. Conferences is in London. We obviously always hope that people will come. It's always difficult, and I get asked, oh, can't it be in other places? It's challenging in terms of making sure that you've got enough people. Yeah. But we have it online as well, So there is that option of joining online.
I always remember that discussion about, what if we have it in Manchester somewhere? But then the problem is all the people in London can't be bothered because Manchester's so far north.
It is frustrating. And I absolutely get it. And we're making much more. And in the last few weeks, I've been in Leeds, Manchester, Birmingham. I'm in Reading next week. We've got a whole program through the year where we're making sure that we're in different places around the UK. Yeah. So we're absolutely covering that, but I think for the conference, in terms of getting that scale, it's London at the moment.
And you do get international visitors too. There's faces there I recognize that, you know, they come in from other locations, even Australia, the US. It's great.
Spain particularly seem always support that we get people from Spain. So
okay, great. So I'm in the show notes, I will put in there about that date and also just some more details about the association if anybody wants to reach out and find out. Jane, I'm assuming maybe an email or LinkedIn. Where's the best place to find you?
So our website, and at the moment we are offering 6 months free membership to workspace operators, and that's recognizing that the industry has grown significantly, and we need to grow awareness of us as the association. And it's with every trade association, the larger the proportion of the industry it can be said to represent, and the stronger it is for everybody. So we're doing that at the moment.
Great idea. Okay, Jane, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure catching up. I look forward to seeing how things evolve, as they always are, and catching you at conference.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Jane. Hi there. I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be a first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews, and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.